So Daniel chapter 10 on the inside of your handouts. In the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, a revelation was given to Daniel, who was called Belteshazzar. His message was true, and it concerned a great war. The understanding of the message came to him in a vision. At that time, I, Daniel, mourned for 3 weeks. I ate no choice food, no meat or wine touched my lips, and I used no lotions at all until the 3 weeks were over. On the 24th day of the first month, as I was standing on the bank of the great river, the Tigris, I looked up, and there before me was a man dressed in linen, with a belt of fine gold from Uphaz around his waist. His body was like topaz, his face like lightning, his eyes like flaming torches, his arms and legs like the gleam of burnished bronze, and his voice like the sound of a multitude. I, Daniel, was the only one who saw the vision. Those who were with me did not see it, but such terror overwhelmed them that they fled and hid themselves. So I was left alone, gazing at this great vision. I had no strength left. My face turned deathly pale and I was helpless. Then I heard him speaking, and as I listened to him, I fell into a deep sleep, my face to the ground. A hand touched me and set me trembling on my hands and knees. He said, "Daniel, you who are highly esteemed, consider carefully the words I'm about to speak to you and stand up, for I have now been sent to you." And when he had said this to me, I stood up, trembling. Then he continued, "Do not be afraid, Daniel. Since the first day that you set your mind to gain understanding and to humble yourself before your God, your words were heard, and I have come in response to them. But the prince of the Persian kingdom resisted me 21 days. Then Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me because I was detained there with the king of Persia. Now I have come to explain to you what will happen to your people in the future, for the vision concerns a time yet to come." While he was saying this to me, I bowed with my face towards the ground and was speechless. Then one who looked like a man touched my lips, and I opened my mouth and began to speak. I said to the one standing before me, "I am overcome with anguish because of the vision, my lord, and I feel very weak. How can I, your servant, talk with you, my lord? My strength is gone and I can hardly breathe." Again, the one who looked like a man touched me and gave me strength. "Do not be afraid, you who are highly esteemed," he said. "Peace, be strong now, be strong." When he spoke to me, I was strengthened and said, "Speak, my lord, since you have given me strength." So he said, "Do you know why I have come to you? Soon I will return to fight against the prince of Persia, and when I go, the prince of Greece will come. But first I will tell you what is written in the book of truth. No one supports me against them, except Michael, your prince."
Well, Richard, thanks very much indeed for reading. Please do keep that part of the Bible passage as it's printed open. And thank you for your welcome back. Now, we had the privilege of going to Wimbledon last year. We haven't managed to get tickets in the ballot this year, but we did last year. And we saw the men's doubles semi-final. And if you've been to Wimbledon, then you'll know what a wonderful privilege it is to go to see world-class players in action as you eat your strawberries and cream. But there's another side of Wimbledon that you won't see if, like me, you simply have tickets to watch the tennis. A friend of ours did some work at the All England Tennis Club a few years ago, and she said it was fascinating because actually she saw behind the scenes the underground tunnels that I knew nothing about, all the training facilities, and the food outlets where she found herself eating with the players. In other words, there is a Wimbledon which you do see when you go to watch the tennis, but there is also a Wimbledon that you don't see. And we've seen throughout the book of Daniel that actually the whole world is like that. There is a world which we do see. There is a world which we don't see. It's how the book of Daniel starts. I realise you can't turn to the very first two verses of Daniel chapter 1 unless you're following this on your phone. But let me read the first two verses for you. Because in verse 1, the book starts with a world that we do see. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. That is the world we see, the world of politics and military victories. But verse 2 goes on, it shows us the unseen spiritual world. And the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand. Now let me just stop there for a moment, because it may well be that at this point, as we talk about an unseen spiritual world, that some of us perhaps are beginning to feel rather edgy. Because of course, when our culture thinks of the supernatural, it is either in the context of scary films, or it just sounds weird. But strikingly, Jesus Christ, who was the most normal, sane person ever to have existed, he believed in the supernatural. He knew that demons were real. He knew that the devil is real. He knew there is both the world which we can see as well as the spiritual world that we cannot see. I guess for us it's one of our cultural blind spots, which leads us to our first point there on the outline. There is a spiritual battle. And have a look at verse 1 of that reading from Daniel chapter 10. In the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia. It's now 537 BC. And as we saw last week, the 70 years that God had decreed for the exile in Babylon is over. The first group of exiles, they've returned to Jerusalem. And notice really, the chapter begins with a word from God, which is about a great war, a great battle. Look at the second half of verse 1. Its message was true, and it concerned a great war. The understanding of the message came to him in a vision. At that time, I, Daniel, mourned for 3 weeks. I ate no choice food, no meat or wine touched my lips, and I used no lotions at all until the 3 weeks were over. There at the beginning of the chapter is the spiritual battle, the spiritual conflict. It's also at the end of the chapter, as Daniel is told at the very end of the chapter in verse 21. Verse 20. Do you know why I've come to you? Soon I'll return to fight against the prince of Persia. And when I go, the prince of Greece will come. But first I'll tell you what is written in the book of truth. I wonder if you were here a year ago, those of you who were here a year ago, what we saw in Daniel chapter 7, as we were given a history lesson. How after the Babylonian Empire fell, the Persian Empire would be raised up and then also fall, and then in due course the Greek Empire and then the Roman Empire. How each empire in turn would be defeated by the next one. And verses 20 and 21 are showing us that those physical battles have their spiritual counterparts in the unseen worlds. These nations have their princes, their spiritual forces or powers who fight for them. We see a similar thing in verse 13. But the prince of the Persian kingdom resisted me 21 days. Then Michael, one of the chief priests, came to help me because I was detained there with the king of Persia. In the Bible, Michael is one of the angels who fights for God and for God's people. Here he is fighting with the prince of the kingdom of Persia. In other words, you see, there is a conflict in the unseen world of which the earthly conflicts that you and I see are simply echoes. Now, the New Testament similarly speaks of a spiritual battle. At the start of his ministry, Jesus himself was tempted by Satan. Early on in his ministry, Jesus confronts evil spirits, he drives them out. On the night of his arrest, we're told about Judas, just before he betrayed Jesus, that Satan entered into him. In Ephesians chapter 6, the Apostle Paul tells us that everyone who belongs to Jesus Christ is engaged in the spiritual battle. Let me read Ephesians 6, 10 to 12 to you. Finally, be strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might. Put on the whole armour of God, that you may be able to stand against the schemes of the devil. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the cosmic powers over this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places. And if you and I were to read through Ephesians this lunchtime, we'd see that the battle is everyday life. In other words, we are not meant to have in our minds a picture of Christians slaying demons, but rather the battle that everyone who has put their trust in Jesus faces day to day, to believe the message of Jesus and to live the message of Jesus. A couple of years ago, as a family, we visited the Royal County Show in Cornwall, and one of the highlights for me was the ferret race. I don't think you've ever seen a ferret race. It was very simple. There was a simple course laid out, I guess about 20 metres or so long, with a series of six different coloured drain pipes. So there was a blue drain pipe, a red drain pipe, a green drain pipe, a black one and a white one, and so on. And you had one ferret at the beginning of each drain pipe, and on the word go, a little cage was lifted up, and the idea was the ferret raced from one end of the drain pipe to the other end of the drain pipe, and the ferret which got to the other end first won. Well, it seemed to me that when it came to the race, it was very quickly clear that some of the ferrets knew there was a race on and they were very much in the race. Whereas other ferrets, frankly, didn't have a clue and spent the time dawdling or beginning the race and then going back to the beginning again. Well, may I ask, if you are a follower of Jesus Christ this lunchtime, do you realise there is a spiritual battle on? I take it the reason that Daniel is given this vision is precisely because we so quickly forget. We just live life so often, don't we, at the level of what we can see with our eyes. And you and I need to keep reminding each other that there is also an unseen world and that every Christian is involved in the spiritual battle. One of the most helpful things my wife Rachel will say to me occasionally is to remind me of Ephesians chapter 6, that we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the spiritual forces of the heavenly places. You see, why is it, for example, that friends and colleagues can so often seem so resistant to the claims of Jesus? Well, the answer, 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 4, it's there on the outline. The God of this world, that's Satan, has blinded the minds of the unbelievers. That is the spiritual battle in action. I may say while we're on this that if you're here this lunchtime and you are simply investigating the Christian faith, so to speak, then please will you understand that there is both this world that we can see, but there is also a spiritual world that we cannot see. Which is why it's so important to listen to Jesus Christ. Because Jesus is the one person who has come from the world that is unseen into the world that is seen. He alone can tell us about the unseen world, the spiritual realities of the unseen world. So that's our first point this lunchtime. There is a spiritual battle. Secondly, three convictions for the spiritual battle. First of all, a conviction that Jesus Christ is Lord. Because I guess for some of us, when we think about this spiritual battle, we imagine a kind of titanic struggle between God on the one hand and Satan on the other hand. Sometimes God wins, at other times Satan wins, as if the future of the whole world hangs in the balance. But this vision, which lies at the very heart of Daniel chapter 10, shows that that could not be further from the truth. It is a vision of Jesus Christ. It is a vision of Jesus in all his splendor and supremacy, a powerful vision of his greatness and majesty. So look with me at verses 4 to 6. On the 24th day of the first month, as I was standing on the bank of the great river, the Tigris, I looked up, and there before me was a man dressed in linen, with a belt of fine gold from Euphaz around his waist. His body was like topaz, his face like lightning, his eyes like flaming torches, his arms and legs like the gleam of burnished bronze, and his voice like the sound of multitudes. here is Jesus. He is the Lord of glory, and no one can stand against him. Jesus has already been introduced in the book of Daniel in chapter 7. He is the Son of Man, the one to whom the living God has given all authority over all people for all time. In fact, this vision here in Daniel chapter 10 is very similar, you may have noticed some of you, to the description of the risen Jesus that we are given in the book of Revelation at the end of the New Testament. So the belt of gold, the eyes of fire, the arms and legs of bronze, the roar of his voice. And the effect of the vision here on Daniel is exactly the same as the effect in Revelation on John. Both fall down before Jesus, and the words of comfort in verse 12 are also the same. Do not be afraid. Now, will you imagine for a moment how encouraging this would have been for Daniel? Perhaps the very reason we're told at the beginning of the chapter he was fasting and mourning was because he was so discouraged. God's people looked weak, God's cause looked very unimpressive, especially when compared with the mighty Babylonian Empire. And when you open the newspapers, all people were concerned about was Babylonian politics and the World Cup. God's people largely ignored. You see, that is the world that Daniel can see. But in the unseen world, things look very different. Jesus is Lord. He is completely in control. I wonder if you saw the documentary on Heathrow Airport that was run on three consecutive evenings last summer. It captivated us as a family. And I think my favourite part was when we went up into the control tower. Because you see, as you watched four planes at this end of the airport up in the sky, four planes stacked waiting to land, one every 90 seconds, and then at this end of the airport, another eight planes all lined up ready to take off, also one every 90 seconds. And then as you looked at sort of countless other planes moving around the airport, the whole thing looked completely random, and the margin for error looked very small indeed. And the television reporter was clearly amazed, having gone up into the control tower, when the guy in charge of air traffic control was as calm as a cucumber. And she said to him, you know, how come? Why is it you're so calm? And he replied, we know exactly what's going on. We are completely in control. As someone who flew out of Heathrow Airport a few weeks ago, I was particularly pleased to be reminded of that. Well, you see, on a far greater scale, that is the picture here in Daniel chapter 10. The outcome of the spiritual battle is not in any doubt. Jesus Christ is Lord. Now, the New Testament makes that much clearer for us. I put some verses there on the outline. In John chapter 12, verse 31, Jesus speaks of his death on the cross as the moment when Satan will be defeated. Now is the judgment of this world. Now will the ruler of this world be cast out. As a result, the Apostle Paul says in Romans chapter 8 that Satan is now powerless over those who